From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it's War of Will coming down to the 16th pole in front. In front by 2 lengths late. A late charge from Longshot Everfast in the inside two, but nothing stood in his way. War of Will won the Preakness.
Bricks and Mortar pumps with March to the Arch, nonetheless closing in with 2.5 lengths to make up and a 16th to go. It's Curb On in front, Clyde's Image. Bricks and Mortar finding stride late in the game, and Bricks and Mortar's up in time.
From our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios, welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Kentucky Downs.
Leora and Channing Hill on the outside of Serengeti Empress, who digs in toward the rail. It's these two, Ladyapolis Third, the others with plenty of work to do. It's down to these two and Serengeti Empress, who's holding off the challenge of Leora as they come down to the line. Serengeti Empress has taken the Kentucky Oaks.
And Vino Rosso edging away from Gift Box. He's coming into his own. And Vino Rosso at age 4 goes on to win the Gold Cup at Santa Anita.
Now, here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Good morning once again, everyone. Welcome to the Equine Forum presented by Kentucky Downs here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This, of course, the show that launched a network, and we're happy to have you with us for the next 2 hours this morning on Sirius 219 XM Channel 201, and of course, streaming worldwide and podcast on our website at horseracingradio.net. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, Jude Feld, Pontiff of the Pick Four, coming to you from our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios on a steamy day in the bluegrass and a steamy day for much of the country. We are 104 days, 5 hours, and just 35 minutes away from the Breeders' Cup World Championships at Santa Anita in Arcadia, California. That comes up November 1st and 2nd. We'll be there as your exclusive radio network. JT, big-time racing coast-to-coast today. You have races at Monmouth Park. You have, of course, with the Grade 1 Haskell Invitational, which is a win and you're in for the Breeders' Cup Classic Division. And you have a big day out of Del Mar as well, as pretty much every weekend is going to be throughout that Del Mar meet.
Yeah, the Del Mar meet is going to be kind of the savior of the day with all the tracks on the East Coast canceling and a nice card out at Del Mar. The Haskell... a little dicey. It's a little hot.
It's going to be steamy. They're calling for temperatures mid to upper 90s, and that's before you add in the heat index that is going to be well over 100. And many racetracks in that region, including Saratoga, by the way, canceling their program on Saturday afternoon because of that oppressive heat. Does Monmouth make that change, or do you think they go on with the show?
Well, everything I read yesterday indicated they were going on with the show, but that also remains to be seen. They were talking about maybe delaying post times and doing some voodoo with that. So I don't know. It's a dicey situation. If you saw Rosemary Hennig's picture this morning on Twitter, she posted a picture in Saratoga. Beautiful morning, but the sky was totally red.
Yeah.
It's going to be super hot up there. I'm glad they canceled. A lot of horsemen and horses are going to appreciate the fact that they'll be in the coolest spot they can be this afternoon.
Dennis Drazen at Monmouth coming out yesterday in a press conference and talking about the potential to move post time back today. They are scheduled to go with a first post of noon Eastern for a 14-race program. That puts the Haskell right around 5:47 Eastern time. You know, quite honestly, moving it back a couple of hours, I don't think you really accomplish a whole lot other than getting the Haskell a little bit later. Let's say, for example, you went at 2:30, right? And you're about 5 hours and 47 minutes into the program before you get to the Haskell as race 12. That puts the Haskell at 8:17 in the evening, which is fine. They don't need lights. There's still plenty of light there in New Jersey at 8:17. That makes that race a little bit better. It'll be a bit cooler. But how about all the races before? You're running those from 2:30 to, you know, 8 o'clock. That's a hot, you know, time of the day. You're talking about 2:30, 3, 4, 5. That's maybe the hottest part of the day.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's already 84 degrees in Asbury Park. So
my kind of weather.
That's about 15 minutes from Monmouth. So I can tell you it's going to be a scorcher today. I mean, 84 degrees at 8 o'clock in the morning is not your typical Asbury Jersey Shore weather.
You'll love this. If you want to pick me out driving around the bluegrass here today, just look for the guy riding around with all the windows down, the radio blaring. That's going to be me. Right? I did it all day yesterday. People thought I was nuts.
Well, that you are nuts. That's not a speculation.
I mean, I told somebody I drove around with no air conditioning yesterday. They thought I was crazy.
Yeah, no, it's wild because I left the studio here last night a little after 6 o'clock. It was 100 degrees in my car.
Yeah.
And my car was in the shade. It was parked under a tree all day. So, it's a little nuts. But hopefully everything's okay. They get the card in. You know, Dennis Drazen was kind of banking on a little offshore breeze or whatever, but it's not
a big breeze.
It's not necessarily going to make a lot of difference. It gets very hot at Monmouth Park sometimes.
I guess it's appropriate and fitting that Saratoga would be dark on this Saturday afternoon, considering the fact that yesterday at the age of 93, we lost one of the great icons in the sport of thoroughbred racing, one of the great ambassadors for the game, and one of the great humanitarians that we've seen in the history of mankind, and that is Mary Lou Whitney, who did pass away yesterday. And Jude, she is remembered by so many people on this weekend, not just in Saratoga, not just here in Kentucky, where she was such a popular figure, but all over the world, and not just for her impact on the racing world, but what she did for people away from the racetrack.
Absolutely. She was just a tremendous human being. She donated a lot of money to different charities, from healthcare to art. Of course, the racetrack. I remember I only met Mrs. Whitney one time, and it was in passing at a party. But you'd hear her name all the time. Yeah. You'd say, "Oh, who paid for that? Oh, Mrs. Whitney. Mrs. Whitney paid for that. Oh, I was in the hospital, and I was in the wing that Mrs. Whitney paid for."
Yeah.
I mean, ever since I moved to Kentucky, I've heard that over and over and over again. Come to love Mrs. Whitney for who she is and what she did for everybody. It seemed like there was nobody too small to be on her list, and just a very thoughtful person, and countless people will miss her, not just the people that knew her and loved her in person, but those of us who were on the sidelines and knew what she did and how much she meant to the racing community.
We're going to hear from Hall of Fame trainer Nick Zito later in the program. He took the time to visit with you and Anthony yesterday on our Express Bet radio program, and our producer Lee was kind enough to send me the interview afterwards. He said, if you have an opening on the Equine Forum tomorrow, you might want to play this back. Let me tell you, that was such a special interview. Nick has that longtime friendship and the longtime client-trainer relationship with Mary Lou Whitney, and he had some beautiful things to say about Mary Lou, and we're going to play that interview. Originally, I was going to play it at 8:35. We had to shift some things around. That will come your way at 9 o'clock Eastern time this morning. Nick Zito looking back on the life and the racing career of Mary Lou Whitney.
Yeah, it was great to talk to Nick yesterday, and he constantly reiterated the celebration of life, which Tim Wilkin talked about in his tweets. Tim had a very special relationship with Mrs. Whitney as well. And I think, although everybody's sad, the thing that you have to remember is Mary Lou had just a tremendous run. She had one of the most incredible lives you could ever imagine having. And, she pretty much died at the top of her game. So
yeah.
I think all in all, if you live to be 93 and you have that kind of life, no complaints. And I know she wouldn't have any.
Did you know she spent some time in radio?
I did not know that.
I didn't either. It's funny when people like this pass on and you read their full obituary and you start looking back at some of the things they did in their life. She did. She spent some time as a disc jockey, and she spent time playing popular music for servicemen during World War II. And I had no idea that she did any of that. If you go to bloodhorse.com, you can read the full story. It's in there. But you find these things out about people that are just fascinating.
We should have had her do a couple of Equine forums or Express Bet radios. That would have been fun.
It would have been tremendous to have Mary Lou. And unfortunately, a sad day. But as Jude said, a day to celebrate the life of one of the great people that we've seen in the history of mankind, and that is Mary Lou Whitney, gone at the age of 93, but certainly not forgotten. And again, appropriate and fitting that Saratoga, because of the heat, not because of Mary Lou passing, but because of the heat, would be dark today. It just seems somewhat fitting that that would be the case in Saratoga Springs, New York. All right, here's what's coming up over the course of the next 2 hours. We're going to talk about the program at Monmouth, because not only is the spotlight on the three-year-olds in the Grade 1 Haskell Invitational, you also have that Grade 3 Molly Pitcher, which is going to feature maybe the top older filly in the country. That is Midnight Bisou, who is owned by our good friend, our colleague, Jeff Bloom, and his Bloom Racing Stable. Jeff is going to be with us in just a few minutes, at right around 8:15 Eastern, to talk about Midnight Bisou and what they're doing in terms of precautions to get her ready to race in that kind of heat, if indeed they do have the program at Monmouth later today. 8:35, going to be joined by Ted Nicholson, who is the Senior Vice President and General Manager of Kentucky Downs. He'll be with us to tell you about their meet, which begins on August 31st. 5 days of racing. It will be quick, but we'll talk to Ted all about it, and he'll tell you some of the incentives that they'll have in place for horsemen who are looking to run their horses at Kentucky Downs. Again, Nick Zito looking back on the life and the career of Mary Lou Whitney, doing it through the eyes of his relationship with her. Special, special interview coming up at 9 o'clock Eastern time. Joe Talamo is going to be aboard Mucho Gusto for Hall of Famer Bob Baffert in this afternoon's Haskell. Joe's going to be with us from the Jersey Shore at 9:25 Eastern time. And then we'll get ready to wrap things up toward the end of the program. That's all coming up over the course of the next 2 hours. It is going to be a very busy show. Stay with us. We're back with Jeff Bloom next on the Equine Forum on HRRN, all presented by Kentucky Downs.
Attention, Kentucky breds. Make plans to race at the upcoming Kentucky Downs meet starting August 31st, where Kentucky breds compete for huge purses. Kentucky breds will run for $130,000 in maiden events, with allowance races offering up to $145,000, the highest in the nation. Plus a Breeders' Cup win and you're in the Turf Sprint on September 7th. With additional purse money available for KTDF-eligible horses, Kentucky Downs is the place to race a Kentucky bred this summer. Visit KentuckyBred.org for details.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you, with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
Alter Nation, sire of Serengeti Empress, winner of this year's Grade 1 Kentucky Oaks.
Serengeti Empress has taken the Kentucky Oaks.
From his first two crops, Alter Nation has produced 9 black type horses and 5 black type winners with more than $4.7 million in earnings. 79% of his runners have won or placed, and Alter Nation is among the leaders of his crop with average earnings per runner of over $42,000. Alter Nation, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Brody's Cause, a Grade 1 winner at 2 and 3 by Giants Causeway.
Brody's Cause and Corey Lannery, a tremendous run from deep in the pack to pull the upset in the Claiborne Breeders' Futurity.
His final time of 143.27 in Keeneland's Grade 1 Breeders' Futurity is the fastest running on dirt since 2000, while defeating Grade 1 winner Exaggerator. Look for his first crop yearling selling this summer. Brody's Cause, standing at Spendthrift.
This is Jockey Orlando Bocachica, and you are listening to the Hall Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Kentucky Downs.
Midnight Bisou's going to ride the rail right in behind Come Dancing as they make their way to the top of the stretch. Three quarters in 109.23. They're into the stretch. Come Dancing turns for home in front. Midnight Bisou now ranges up alongside, and she goes on by. Oh, and she's pulling away. Pulling away from Come Dancing, Mopetism, and the others. Midnight Bisou leaves no doubt today.
She won the Phipps in hand. And then it was Come Dancing, Mopetism, and Escape Clause.
Larry Colmus with the call of the Grade 1 Ogden Phipps that was on the Belmont Stakes undercard. It was a race you heard on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And Midnight Bisou stating her case as the top distaffer in the country. She'll go postward later today in the Grade 3 Molly Pitcher at Monmouth Park. She's come out of two consecutive Grade 1 wins, now racing in Grade 3 competition at Monmouth later today. She is a huge favorite because of that class edge. And we are joined now by Jeff Bloom, who is not only the owner of Bloom Racing and Midnight Bisou, he is one of our colleagues here on the network and works with us throughout the year. And Jeff, kind enough to spend a little time on a very busy day for him. Jeff, good morning, my friend, and happy Midnight Bisou Day.
Good morning to you guys. How goes it?
Pretty good.
Things are good. Going to be a little steamy here. How about at Monmouth? What are they calling for there today?
It's a touch warm. Yeah, but you guys know me. I like the heat. Boy, am I going to get what I like today.
Yeah, I imagine you're not wearing a jacket for the first time in centuries.
I'm 50-50 on the coat, but jackets aren't mandatory, which is, it's a good thing. That saying, since we're on the shore here, we've got that coastal breeze. I don't know how much that coastal breeze is coming over to the track. But
hey, well,
it's going to be warm. There's no question.
At least Monmouth has a bar in the paddock, and they serve you while you're in the paddock. That's a big plus on a day like today.
I didn't know about that. That's a good one.
Oh, yeah, that's one of the highlights of Monmouth Park. Hopefully the ice doesn't melt by the time they put it in your cup. But
I forgot what they were telling me, but, you know, they've got some good protocols in place because of the heat. One of the things was there was a number of bags weighing over 15,000 tons. Or I'm sure I'm not getting the number correctly, but it was a lot of ice, and probably wouldn't be a good thing if that started to melt.
How about the precautions, Jeff? And by the way, how concerned are you with that heat with, your outstanding, maybe the top filly in the country now, Midnight Bisou? How concerned are you with that heat there today for her?
Not really overly concerned. It's hot, Mike, but it's been hotter before. A lot has been made leading up to this weekend's races concerning the heat because of the heat index. But here at Monmouth, I mean, while it is hot, it's a little muggy. It's not what I would call overly excessive and or dangerous. If it was, nobody would be participating. And, you know, the key is just really keeping your horses hydrated. And, you monitor that. You make sure that your horse is getting lots of water, that they're not showing any signs of heat distress or anything like that. And when we took her out to train yesterday, you know, they get a little bit warm coming off the track, but they're, you know, you just watch for signs that they're showing any signs of wear or anything like that. And the fact of the matter is there'll be plenty of hoses out there. There'll be plenty of veterinarians standing by and more importantly, following their exercise or their race, you just make sure that you get the fluids in them. It's all about keeping the fluids running through the horses and the humans alike.
Is it true that you experimented with a new rider yesterday?
I think it had something to do with the heat.
I think it was an old rider, actually. It wasn't a new rider. It was an old rider, but you look good doing it.
It was an old rider where if the heat was bothering someone, it wouldn't matter.
You were fresh as a daisy, even after a jog in the heat. I thought that was impressive.
Yeah, for people that don't know what we're talking about, Jeff, fill them in.
So Midnight Bisou's crew that typically ships with her was one less in not having her exercise rider head over here because she was coming over for such a short time. So when I had talked to Team Asmussen, Scott Blasi, assistant trainer, we had discussed my bringing my tack so I could jump on her, and it was just going to be, a one-day trip around the track. And going into it, we knew I would have Scott on our trusted pony, Red, who is Midnight Bisou's constant companion. And so pretty much just had to close my eyes, hold on, and make it around there.
Well, that was good. I think I compared you to Mr. Ramsey, who actually rode his horse, who won the Sandy Lane Gold Cup in Barbados the next morning. I have a picture of that.
In the ocean.
I was only going to post it if somebody questioned me, because it's not my picture. But, yeah, it was right next to the hotel. Ken Ramsey bare-chested on the back of his horse, and that was just quite an experience. So I like those things. It's fun, and it was good for you. Is that the first time you've ever been on her?
It is, Jude, and as you guys know, I do like to still get on horses from time to time, and I had even entertained the idea of spending some time at Saratoga getting on horses, and I hadn't been on Midnight Bizu, and certainly didn't want to be the one to get on her and mess things up, but I can say that I'm thrilled to have been fortunate enough to get on the back of a filly like that, and she's just so incredibly classy and composed. And that was her first time making her way around the Monmouth Oval. And so oftentimes, as you guys know, horses can be a little concerned looking around, not sure of their surroundings. And for her, we've always talked about this with Midnight, just even when she schools or whatever it is she's doing, that it just takes her a couple of seconds to see the sights. And once she does, she settles down, drops her head, and moves about her business. I mean, she's feeling good, but she's just got so much class and composure that she makes everybody's job so much easier.
Yeah, visiting with Jeff Bloom, Bloom Racing, Midnight Bizu going this afternoon at Monmouth in the Grade 3 Molly Pitcher. Jeff, she comes out of those two impressive victories in Grade 1 company. You opt for this Grade 3 spot this afternoon. Talk about that decision.
Yeah, a lot of folks have been saying, well, wow, you put her in a Grade 3. Why would you do that? If you look at the racing calendar, the options available to us with a filly that goes two turns, there's very few options. And, ultimately, for the late summer, what we're trying to do is be ready for the personal ensign at Saratoga. So really it came down to a couple different race options. And for us, the Molly Pitcher, one, the distance made a lot of sense. We have no concerns about Midnight Bizu going farther than a mile in the 16th, but this is probably an easier spot from a distance standpoint, less taxing, getting to the personal ensign, and also the course over at Saratoga. She's over there. That's her main base for the summer. She trains well over there. But we thought one difficult race over that track or challenging race in the Grade 1 would be a better way to go into the Breeders' Cup instead of having two races over that track, which can be a little bit more taxing or challenging. And while Midnight Bizu ran well at Saratoga last summer, not sure that it was her favorite surface. It'll be fine for her, but it just everything just lined up better to bring her over here in the Molly Pitcher and then continue on getting to the Breeders' Cup this way.
Yeah, Anthony and I were talking about it on the show yesterday, and I told him I thought it was probably more of a timing issue than anything, not wanting to work up to a race, at Saratoga to put a little tightener in her and just be able to train her a little bit more normally up to the race that you're really shooting for. So I'm glad I was right.
Yeah, well, Jeff, it has to help, too, knowing that you have a spot guaranteed in the starting gate of the Breeders' Cup Distaff, virtue of that win in the Ogden Phipps there a few weeks back. Talk about how that might affect, or how it has affected your thinking and your planning.
Well, look, it's, holding on to a win and you're in is a wonderful thing, just the economics of it, but the fact that you've got that spot. What's the easiest way to get there? You don't have to modify or alter your race schedule based on making sure you secure a spot. And, Midnight Bizu's resume is pretty strong with her multiple grade ones. And so in terms of knowing that you'd have a spot, you'd feel pretty comfortable about it. But the win and you're in program is just such a great opportunity for horsemen to take advantage of and know that not only are you saving, the money for actually getting your spot to run, but that you don't have to worry about having that spot. And, Steve Asmussen just does such an incredible job of putting a strategy together in terms of what's the map for getting to somewhere the right way, point A to point B. How do you get there the smartest way, the easiest way? And so it's a real fun thing to sit back and be involved in that process with Steve. You know, when you look from one end of the calendar to the other, and there's just this great vision. And so, you know, it's not as always to see before you head in that direction, but once you've got to that point, you know, once you've followed that map, it's like, wow, this was so obvious. And that's one of the things that Steve, amongst so many other things, is just so exceptional at.
Jeff, we're talking about Midnight Bisou because she is the story of the afternoon, or at least one of the storylines on that Monmouth program here on Saturday afternoon. But you also picked up another Grade 1 victory following her victory in the Ogden Phipps when Henley's Joy upset the Belmont Derby. A great effort from Henley's Joy taking that race, another Grade 1 for you. Is it starting to kind of get a little bit, you know, ho-hum winning all these Grade 1s now?
It's far from home. As you guys know, just getting a horse to the races, let alone winning a race, and then being able to win races at that level, no, it's not ho-hum, and it'll never get boring. And that race in particular for that horse was so gratifying just because you guys know I've been very high on Henley's Joy for quite a long time, and he's been such an impressive young horse that's just been right on the cusp of what I call crossing over. And Mike Maker and I, Mike, who trains that horse, had been every time we've gone into a race, joked about how frustrated we were prior to that start, just because, you know, we felt we had the best horse. He just needs to get a clean trip. And fortunately for us, the way things played out was he got an absolutely crystal clean trip and a brilliant ride by Jose Lascano. And as it turned out, he was good enough to show that he should have been one of the horses that was winning those kinds of races.
What's his schedule moving forward?
So he's up at Saratoga. He went straight to Saratoga from Belmont. In fact, he just had his first breeze back today, just a nice little soft maintenance breeze to stretch his leg. And he'll start next on August 4th in the second leg of the Turf Trinity in what is the Saratoga Derby.
Well, he's Jeff Bloom, Bloom Racing, really on a roll. He has worked extremely hard to get to this point, and it's paying off for him now. Jeff, congratulations on all that success. All the best with Midnight Bisou later this afternoon. Like all of our guests who appear on the program, my friend, we're going to get you a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. We will do that, and all the best later today. And by the way, if Mike Smith, if something happens between now and post time for the Molly Pitcher, you've got your tack, right? Are you the relief pitcher today if something goes wrong with Mike?
Hey, don't laugh. We've already talked about that, and I don't have to pay the agent's commission. So
that's awesome.
We're ready.
Sounds like a jock.
Exactly.
Good luck today, brother. Appreciate the visit.
Thanks so much, guys. You guys take care.
All right, Jeff Bloom. Bloom. Great line.
Yeah. Heard that one before.
Yeah, no doubt. It'd be great to see Midnight Bisou. Let's see if she can get it done again today in that Molly Pitcher. And, of course, Henley's Joy moving forward for him as well. Time now for your Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you each and every Saturday by the Lexus Store of Lexington on the corner of New Circle and Liberty here in the Bluegrass. Make sure if you're in the market for a new vehicle, pre-owned vehicle, and you're in the horse business, you go see the folks at the Lexus Store of Lexington. I promise you, you won't do any better than the Godfather Tony Attiano and everybody at the Lexus Store who really do make the difference every time you walk in their door. It's the Lexus Legends of the Turf. We'll come back and visit with Ted Nicholson of Kentucky Downs. That's next on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
He was the son of Forley out of Lady Golconda by Hasty Road and was foaled in 1970, the same year as Secretariat. But while Secretariat began showing championship mettle as soon as he began to train, this horse was very rapidly acquiring a marked reputation as an unmanageable rogue. He was a huge colt who very early on displayed an ungentlemanly interest in fillies. Further, he had the dangerous and painful habit of savaging any individual who dared come close enough to him. His owners, the Lazy F Ranch, had him gelded to try to correct a problem, and though that surgical process made him at least trainable, he never got to the racetrack till he was three. He broke his maiden in his second start and had second-place finishes in the Hutchinson Stakes and the Florida Derby. But he ran a distant fourth while priced at 28-1 to Secretariat in that colt's record-smashing win in the Kentucky Derby. This horse came into his zone in his sophomore season on the track in the fall with convincing scores in the Roamer and the Discovery Handicaps at Aqueduct, and that, as the saying goes, was the start of something big indeed. At four, his star shone brightly in the heavens of thoroughbred racing. He began that campaign with four straight wins. He was a strikingly handsome, huge bay, standing 17-plus hands, and one could easily pick him out of a crowd of horses at any distance. He did have a gift for the crowd-pleasing late charge that made him very popular with the public, and horsemen were awed by his incredible versatility. At the conclusion of his four-year-old campaign, he won the 12-furlong Woodward by a neck, and 3 weeks later came back to soundly whip the nation's premier sprinters and the 7-furlong Vosburgh Handicap, winning it by three. And just 3 weeks after that, he rolled to a devastating win over a solid field of 9 distance horses in the grueling 2-mile Jockey Club Gold Cup. In that year of 1974, he won 3 Eclipse Awards, Best Older Horse or Gelding, Best Sprinter, and Horse of the Year. He followed that year with 2 other scores as Horse of the Year, both in 1975 and 1976. In both those years, he won 2 legs of the Handicap Triple Crown. The second year, just missing the triple and losing by a heartbreaking nose to Foolish Pleasure in the Suburban. His 1976 campaign, his final on the racetrack, found him chalking up one of the most remarkable victories in the chronicled annals of racing in the Marlborough Cup. Honest Pleasure was in receipt of 18 pounds from this horse, who was burdened with a weighty impost of 137 pounds. Honest Pleasure moved out to what appeared to be an insurmountable lead in that 10-furlong test. At the top of the stretch, you couldn't find our horse of the day with a proverbial searchlight. But on a sloppy track, Bill Shoemaker turned him loose and he gobbled up huge chunks of real estate in an absolutely breathtaking run that made him appear as though literally shot from a cannon. He got up to win it in the very last stride by a head in a heart-stopping charge to the wire. He was finally forced into retirement by a bad ankle, but not before he had answered the call to post 57 times and winning 34 of those and being in the money on 50 of those occasions. 50 for 57 in the money. Remarkable. That great thoroughbred who turned from rogue to champion and was, in every sense of the word, a people's horse was Forgo.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. And remember, when you go to the Lexus store, ask for the Godfather, Tony Attiano. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
Bloom Racing. Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Pulling away from Come Dancing, Mopetism, and the others, Midnight Bizou leaves no doubt today. She won the FIPS in hand.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
Power.
Anchor Down has the lead as they turn for home. Anchor Down in front by 3. Anchor Down has built a 5-length lead with just a 16th of the finish. Anchor Down wins the Westchester.
Passion.
Anchor Down is still there coming to the 16th pull. Tamar Coase can't get by him. And Anchor Down wires the field in the Kelso.
Performance.
Gainesway Stallion Anchor Down, a son of three-time champion sire Tappet and a top miler who won the Grade 2 Kelso with a final time of 1:32 and 4/5, posting a 1:08 buyer speed figure. A half to Grade 1 winner Sweet Lulu. Anchor Down strongly resembles his sire and will be represented by his first crop of yearlings this year. Brilliantly fast, Anchor Down, standing at Gainesway.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainesway Farm.
Hi, this is Larry Colmus, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Kentucky Downs.
Maximum Security being asked for his best. Last Judgment is into the third spot. Length and a half more in identifier and direct order, but Maximum Security is going to have to work for it. King for a Day on the outside, and these two arrive at the top of the stretch. They've separated themselves by five. Maximum Security all in toward the inside. King for a Day, a final furlong, greets Maximum Security, who's just a half length in front. King for a Day on the outside, going to make him earn it at the 16th pole. It's a question of who wants it more. King for a Day forges to a narrow advantage. Maximum Security has been defeated. King for a Day by a length. Maximum Security second. Direct order with third, fourth, Last Judgment.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Kentucky Downs on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pettit, Jude Feld, that is Baron and Pontiff in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington broadcast studios. King for a Day defeating heavily favored Maximum Security last time out in the Pegasus at Monmouth. That was on June 16th. They'll get a rematch later this afternoon in the Grade 1 Haskell Invitational, a win and you're in for the Breeders' Cup Classic Division. That coming your way at 5:47 Eastern as of now. As we told you at the top of the show, if you are just joining us, Dennis Drazen at Monmouth coming out yesterday saying that they do have the option to move post time back, but have not seen anything to this point. And if we do, we're kind of monitoring the social media feeds and the web feeds here too. And if we do see anything, we'll pass that along. But as of now, noon post for a 14-race program and the Haskell race number 12, 5:47 Eastern. No doubt we'll see some of those horses that are competing at Monmouth today later this summer at Kentucky Downs as they kick off a five-day meet. That's right, 5 days of racing. Begins August 31st. You have September 5th, 7th, 8th, and September 12th. As their website says, it's going to be quick, but man, it's going to be good. And we are joined now by Ted Nicholson, who is the Senior Vice President and General Manager at Kentucky Downs. Ted, good morning, and welcome to the show, my friend.
Good morning, guys.
Yeah, good morning. Looking forward to that meet coming up. You know, we're still a little ways away, but it'll be here before we know it. And I mentioned it's going to be quick and 5 days of racing, but so, so good. So much quality involved in that racing program.
Yeah, we're pretty excited about the meet coming up. It's going to be our best ever, hopefully. We've really elevated our game even higher with, our purses. We couldn't go much higher on the maidens and allowance, so we went $1 million higher on our stakes program. So we've got 11 stakes that are $500,000 or more, so we're pretty excited.
Yeah, one of the things that I love people say is, oh, I'm saving this one for Kentucky Downs. And that's got to make you happy, too.
I love hearing that. Especially when they bypass a race at Saratoga to run by us.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of a mantra. I mean, we hear it a lot, and people have really started to pay attention because of the purses. And I think they have a good time when they go to Kentucky Downs. It's a lot of fun to race down there.
It is. I've been everywhere like you guys, but it is different. It's a country fair atmosphere. You pull up your chair, grab a beer, and you're watching races like it used to be.
Ted, for people who have never been there, you kind of touch on a short description of what it's all about, but explain to our listeners what makes Kentucky Downs so special.
I think it's just because it's just nestled, in the heart of America. And, you know, we don't have the grandiose grandstands. We don't have, the high-level dining you might have in the turf clubs of Churchill or Keeneland. but we do our best to service the, everybody that's there. You know, like I said, it's just, it's fun because it is so country atmosphere. You know, you grab a beer or you grab a hot dog. If you bring, you can bring your own chairs. You can get there early and try and snag a, an umbrella table, or if, you know, buy in advance. We have a lot of, you know, seats and dining experiences that are there, but they go quick, and so those folks that come last minute end up just bringing their own and enjoying themselves.
Yeah, I think one of the draws is that you're so close to the horses. You know, when you're at the races there, the horses are nearby. You actually get to see them, to spend a little quality time with them. I mean, it's unique in most racetrack operations. And then you, you look at the track and it's like you're racing in a field, like you might have been doing in the 1800s before all the fancy grandstands and stuff were built. And it's just a really cool experience. It's something that you can't get anywhere else, and I think people really gravitate to that. And as far as needing the dining room, I mean, one of the best things I ever ate at a racetrack was at Atlantic City when they had a two-day meet and the place was closed down and they brought in some guy to cook hamburgers. It was the best hamburger I ever ate in my life. It was grilled out, you know, and everybody was there in shorts and Hawaiian shirts and just having a great time. It was a grass only meet because the main track was full of weeds, and it was just it was fantastic. I mean, and I think it gives you that feel, but much more upgraded and a real experience to go to the races there.
It is, and the turf course itself. You know, Jude, you mentioned weeds. I think, you know, a lot of times people, you know, will, in the industry, will say, oh, yeah, the races are on the weeds. It used to be that way at Kentucky Downs. I think, you know, years ago it was thought of as, you know, that, you know, plowed field that they just threw some grass seed on. And we have really, really taken great care, more or less babysitting our turf course the last couple of years. And I was just walking on it yesterday, and it is in as great a shape as it's ever been. No weeds and just really lush.
Visiting with Ted Nicholson, the Senior Vice President and General Manager at Kentucky Downs. For those of you tuning in at this time, expecting to hear Hall of Famer Nick Zito and his remembrance of Mary Lou Whitney. I had tweeted yesterday we were going to air that interview at 8:35. Shifted some things around here this morning, so that interview comes your way at 9 o'clock Eastern. Make sure you stay tuned for that. It was a very special interview with Nick and Jude and Anthony on Express Bet Radio yesterday. Ted, when you talk to horsemen around the country and you tell them about Kentucky Downs and some of the things that will benefit them when they show up, what are some of the things that you make sure that you portray to them?
Well, I think the best thing to get across is pretty much what I was saying before, which is the condition of the turf course. Because, you know, in our industry, you know, word spreads, and I think for a long time, people, a lot of the higher end trainers weren't comfortable racing, you know, at Kentucky Downs. Just because of the quality of the turf course. But, you know, what I try to do is, you know, tell them, look, ask around. Ask some of the jocks. Ask Pratt or Florent Giroux or Julian or any of the riders or Corey Lannery. They'll tell you that our turf course is in phenomenal shape. So we just try to convince them that it's you know, it's worth coming for the money. They're going to – not only will they – enjoy the course, enjoy the track, but what I have heard from a lot of horse players is that once a horse runs at our place, the next time they run very, very well. And I don't know if it's the hills, you know, going up and down that they leg up, but it's an interesting angle.
Well, you got to be dead fit to run up the stretch. I can tell you that much. And a lot of the European jocks love it because it's like riding at home for them. Jimmy Graham says it's his favorite track in the United States. He just loves it there because it reminds him of, you know, riding in Ireland. And I'm sure the French guys enjoy it too, riding out in the provinces and all over the place. And It's really cool when you see those horses come up the stretch, and you know you're praying they hold on, because it's not an easy run to get from the quarter pole home.
Yeah, the stretch is 3/8 of a mile, so you know any of the riders that think that they're just going to let it loose as they turn for home, you're right. You're praying that they make it that last 16.
Ted, we know you have a busy morning. You have some other things you need to get to this morning, but before we let you go, very quickly, you mentioned the increase in the amount of money you're going to offer in stakes purses. Just kind of run through the numbers for us very quickly in terms of what the purses are going to look like for horsemen that want to send their horses to Kentucky Downs.
Well, so the mains are $130,000. The allowance are $150,000. Like I said, we have half a million or more in 11 stakes. We have $1 million Calumet Turf Cup, which has been our signature, but it's never been $1 million. We increased it from $750,000 to $1 million. The purses are the largest. Our daily average, which is $2.3 million in purses, are the largest in the world outside of Asia.
Wow.
Yeah. Jenny Reese gave me that one.
She's good with that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, wonderful. Well, that's enough incentive, I'm sure, for many horsemen who are tuned into this program to run their horses there, and we would highly encourage it. It's a great atmosphere, and you and the team down there, Ted, doing a phenomenal job. So keep up the great work. Like all of our guests who appear on the program, we'll send you a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle, and enjoy the rest of the weekend and get ready for that meet. It'll be here before we know it.
Great. Thanks, guys. Hope to see you there.
Ted Nicholson here on HRRN. We're back with our Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris, and then, of course, Nick Zito, looking back on the life and the career of his longtime friend and colleague, that would be Mary Lou Whitney. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the Breeders' Cup.
This is Tom Durkin for NYBreads.com, inviting you to get with the New York program because it offers owners a better chance to make money. Because you have the option of running in more than 800 races a year where your horse faces only other state breds. And there's more than $40 million in purse money for those restricted races. So come to Saratoga in early August and buy your New York bred yearling at one of the Fassig Tipton sales. And next year, we hope to see you win at the Spa.
Broken Bow continues to deliver rock-solid results. The top 10 Son of Unbridled has sired nearly 150 black-type stakes horses, 75 black-type stakes winners, and over $71 million in earnings. Among those sired by Broken Bow last season were Chocolate Martini, winner of the Grade 2 Fairgrounds Oaks, and Life in Shambles, winner of the Grade 3 Fall Highweight. Sire of Eclipse Champion Champagne Room, Broken Bow has sired additional Grade 1 winners on Bridal Bell, Rosalind, Sassy Image, and Cotton Blossom. Broken Bow, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
Hello, I'm Eric Hamelback, CEO of the National HBPA. Thoroughbred owners and trainers know the importance of keeping their horse on schedule, on the track, and injury-free. Even a small injury can result in losing precious time and serious money. That's why farms worldwide trust KeepSafe V-Mesh Fence from Red Brand. The strong mesh design flexes on impact and reduces injuries, keeping your athletes on schedule and on the track. Learn more about KeepSafe V-Mesh Horse Fence at redbrand.com.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
Elate and Jose Ortiz begins to draw away. Escape Clause couldn't sustain her move. Next in line, Brute Ply is trying to make a bid for that second spot, but it's all Elate down the stretch. Jose Ortiz and Billy Mott back-to-back Delaware handicaps. She's in hand in the final 50 yards.
Elate, the daughter of Darley stallion Medaglia d'Oro, rolled to yet another graded stakes victory in the Grade 2 Delaware handicap this past weekend. Elate also counts Saratoga's Grade 1 Alabama among her 6 lifetime stakes wins, and that makes her your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley Stallion Medaglia d'Oro is the horse with the Midas touch. Only AP Indy has more career black type winners at Saratoga than Medaglia d'Oro. Watch for his latest crop of yearlings at the upcoming select sales and learn more about Medaglia d'Oro and all the Darley Stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
Hi, it's Ian Wilkes here, and you're listening to HRRN Radio.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Kentucky Downs.
Passed up 44.69 half. These three will turn for home together. 3.5 lengths back to T Loves a Fight, who is next on the outside and starting to put in a bid as they arrive at the eighth pole. Binkster in front. Sudden Surprise tries to fight on. T Loves a Fight continues to progress down the middle. Binkster to catch at the 16th pole. T Loves a Fight ranging up alongside. Here's T Loves a Fight right on by. T Loves a Fight beats Binkster on the wire. Zonic charged late for third, and Jared Toto was fourth.
T Loves a Fight. Larry Colmus with the call. That was an allowance optional claiming victory for T Loves a Fight last Sunday at the Spa. And T Loves a Fight, trained by 30-year-old Miami native Orlando Noda, who took the time to join Jude and I this past Wednesday night on our trainer talk show, which is presented by Fasig Tipton. He spent a full hour with us talking about his life and his career and, of course, looking back on that win by T Loves a Fight. It was his first ever victory at Saratoga. Of course, Orlando just getting started with that training career. He's trained three winners. That one of the more memorable ones for him here in 2019. And we thought it only appropriate, because of his success, that Orlando be our Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris. In this segment brought to you each and every week by Stuart, who offers boutique full-service bloodstock operation. And he wants to thank his owners, his clients, his entire team. He knows that his success is because of you. And with multiple stakes horses over the past 3 years, including Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, Malagasy, and He Hate Me, who scored at Saratoga yesterday, Stuart is your source for success at the highest levels. Visit the Stuart Morris consignment at all of the upcoming sales. He will be there, no doubt about it. And tell him you heard about the Industry Star of the Week right here on HRRN. Well, Orlando, this short clip of that full hour interview, we're going to play about 5 minutes for you. And he started by looking back on that victory by T Loves a Fight last Sunday.
Oh, yeah, no. It began with that Junior actually got hurt in a prior race. And the Rad's agent called us and said, look, put us up. We're like, all right, because Junior already knew the horse. And we're like, man, at least we have a shot. We got a top jock on the horse. And I mounted Errata. I said, send him off the pace. The pace should be quick, and he'll finish for you. You got plenty of horse. And it was a thrill. First start at Saratoga for a win. It was it's just a dream come true. Like, it's just a start.
Is that a dream of yours for a long time to run horses at Saratoga?
Yeah, I actually, back in 2017, I was working under Cassie, and I was taking care of a flame away. He was a 2-year-old at the time, come off of a maiden special weight win, and he went his first time as a stake, and I was actually working with him, and we took a picture in Saratoga with flame away, and that was unreal. Even the assistant, I was screaming like I was that day, and the assistant was like, oh, just you can calm down. This is not your first, this is not our first win. I'm like, yeah, but this is my first win. I'm super thrilled.
Yeah, it's special when you can, you know, when you can finally see your dream become a reality. T Loves a Fight, you were telling us before we came on air, actually has a really special connotation to that name. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so actually the breeder of the horse, her name is Teresa, and her husband actually got in contact with me in reference to after we claimed him. When we claimed him, a woman came up and said, oh, yeah, I've been following this horse. If he ever needs to retire, I'd be willing to take him. Well, the story came back from the husband was that she was actually fighting cancer at the time, and they named the horse T Loves a Fight, as she was fighting for her life, and she actually beat it at the time. And it just, like, it lifts up her spirits every time that she sees the horse run. And be it that the horse has won three back-to-back, it's just, like, helping her. She wasn't able to get to the race at Saratoga, be it that she actually had a reoccurrence of it, and she was actually hospitalized. But it just, when her husband came into the paddock, I was like, look, come in the picture. Like, this is all of us. And this is a family. Like, this is a family horse. Like, this is for everyone. So that helped lift up her spirits. And he knows when he's needed the most.
I noticed you train that horse for your family, and sometimes that's hard when you're starting out. You want to do one thing, and somebody in your family wants to do another thing. Has that created any problems for you, or do they leave you alone?
To be honest, everyone has their opinion on training. I'd hear them, and to be honest, at the end of the day, I'm gonna do what I feel is right for the horse. Be it like, for example, my dad was an old time trainer of train them hard and they'll run hard. I'm more of a more conservative. As long as they show up on the race, why blow out their guts in the morning?
Orlando, go back to the beginning. You grow up in Miami. Where did the love of horse racing begin for you?
Well, my dad has always had horses just for himself, one or two here and there, ever since like 78. And we actually got into it, me and my brother Jonathan, we actually got into it in 2012 when we went up to New Jersey. Me and him just took off, and we bought what we thought was a good set of horses, which were $5,000 horses. We ended up paying $2,000 a piece for eight of them, which was kind of a big money pit because, be it that I didn't know much, so my dad was kind of helping us over the phone, and then I went to a training facility in West Hampton, New Jersey, started riding them, started training, and from there on out, we were training under my dad's name, and slowly but surely, we just came along through a lot of issues of, man, it's really tough even to win a race even at a $5,000 level, but we just stick to it, and that year we ended up, I don't know, I think it was 55 races, and I believe it was four wins, a whole bunch of seconds and a couple thirds, but it was the thrill of horse racing when they crossed the line that just, like, it was an instant hook.
Yeah, instant hook. He was hooked the minute the horses crossed the line. And Jude, how many times have we talked about that on this program, that if you could take that feeling of winning a horse race and your horse that you're part of, that you maybe you own the whole thing, maybe you own just a little piece of it, but your horse crossing the finish line first, you know it as a trainer, you know it as an owner. This would be the greatest sport in the world to market, the easiest sport in the world to market.
Yeah, it's an amazing feeling. And I remember, you know, the day I won my first race, and Jeff Siegel was part of the ownership group. He was the client behind me, and I said to Jeff, I said, I guess I can do this, huh? And he laughed. But it was amazing, and now he's won three with one horse, and that's always exciting to have a stable star. So
yeah,
he's a good guy.
Yeah, Orlando Noda, our industry star of the week. That segment brought to you every week by Stuart Morris, and visit those Stuart Morris consignments at Fasig Tipton, at Keeneland, all over the country. He'll be there with his top yearlings, no doubt about it. Yeah, I mean, back to that point for just a minute. My first win as ever being involved in a racehorse, you know this because you're the one who got me involved with your brother Bob and Bongo Racing. Remember when Bob had Bongo and he had a horse named Rush that was out at Chestnut Farm when you were managing Chestnut? And you said, hey, if you're interested in getting involved in a horse, which I came to you and told you I was, you said maybe this is a good one to get in on. And I remember he won his very first race down the hill at Santa Anita, came flying from far back, got up to win our first horse we ever owned, his first race, and he gets up and wins in a thrilling fashion like that. You talk about a hook and wanting more. It's like a drug.
Yeah. Well, your first horse is always incredible. And
I'm like, what's so hard about this?
Yeah. Well, I think you kind of got the bug with Lil Red, right?
Yeah, that's true,
too. Back in the day, you and Michelle came up to watch Lil Red break his maiden for us up there, and that was fun at the old River Downs. But always buy the horse that's in the paddock next to the guy that runs the farm's house.
Yeah.
That's always a good rule. I love that
horse.
He
couldn't outrun me in the paddock, though. I was a little concerned
about
that.
Yeah, that was funny that day. You were trying to get him to run, and he wasn't too interested in it. But
I just knew he couldn't beat me.
I'd seen him in the other paddocks running around, but he was a beautiful horse. He was kind of a no-brainer horse, beautiful. Sound son of More Than Ready, and,
yep.
And he did. That was exciting watching a horse win down the hill like that. That was great.
All right, we have a very busy second half of the program coming your way. You're going to hear from Hall of Famer Nick Zito, his interview with Anthony and Jude yesterday on Express Bet Radio, talking about his longtime friend Mary Lou Whitney, who, if you're just tuning in, passed away yesterday at the age of 93. Joe Talamo, who will be aboard Mucho Gusto in this afternoon's Haskell, is going to be with us at 9:25 Eastern Time, and we're going to hear from Al Young with Four Roses Bourbon. He tells you all about a new mix that is coming out from Four Roses. You want to stay tuned for that. That comes your way toward the end of the program. We're back with Hour 2 right after we pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Jovia fights on. Tacitus is there. And then Tex between horses. Master Fencer on the far outside. They're coming to the finish. And Sir Winston has won the Belmont Stakes.
There's an eighth of a mile to go. Bolo keeps on going. River Boyne on the inside. Catapult far outside. Bowie Zero. But Bolo has something left for the final 16th, and it's going to be Bolo coast to coast in the Shoemaker Mile.
From our Jimmy Johns of Lexington studios, welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Kentucky Downs.
Hunting Horn trying to hold on. Here comes Channel Maker on the outside, ranging up alongside. Magic Wand and Arc Lower closing in two. Channel Maker strikes the front. Channel Maker wins the Man of War.
Stride to stride, a furlong to run. One bad boy, one bad boy. Never looked better, and has got the Queen's Plate well and truly won.
Now, here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Equine Forum. Busy morning on this 20th day of July, 2019. First half of the program featured our interview with Jeff Bloom of Bloom Racing, talking about Midnight Bisou going to the post later today at Monmouth in the Grade 3 Molly Pitcher, and Ted Nicholson from Kentucky Downs previewing what's ahead with their five-day meet, which begins on August 31st, and of course Orlando Noda, our industry star of the week at the end of that first half of the program. Nick Zito spent time with Anthony and Jude yesterday to look back on the life and the career of his longtime friend, Mary Lou Whitney. We're going to play that interview for you in its entirety coming up in just a minute. Joe Talamo with us at 9:25 Eastern Time, and going to be a busy second half of the show. Jude, big racing today, coast to coast. Saratoga has canceled. I said at the top of the show that, you know, of course they canceled because of the heat. That was announced a couple of days ago, but it just feels appropriate and fitting that Saratoga would be dark the day after we lose an icon like Mary Lou Whitney.
Yeah, it's kind of weird how that all worked out, but she was a great lady, and everybody is going to miss her, not only in racing, but in the city of Saratoga. She really was instrumental in rejuvenating the whole city of Saratoga, not just the racetrack, and you'll hear Nick talk about that in the interview, but a sad day, but a happy day as well to celebrate who she was and what she stood for. Just an amazing woman.
Well, don't forget, if you did miss any portion of this program, all you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast of this show and all of our shows, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. And, of course, you can also tune in live with our live streaming coast to coast and worldwide on our website each and every time that we are on the air. All right, without further ado, Nick Zito sitting down with Anthony and Jude yesterday on Express Bet Radio.
Joined now on set here by Hall of Famer Nick Zito. He's won a couple of Derbies, a Preakness, two Belmonts, and most famously probably the 2004 Belmont Stakes. You heard the rejoin earlier. Smarty Jones, the roar of 120,000, but Birdstone ran him down. And he did it for Hall of Fame trainer Nick Zito and the late, great Mary Lou Whitney, who passed away today at the age of 93. We got Nick with us now. Nick, sorry for your loss.
Yeah, thank you so much, Anthony. And I appreciate that. It's all I've been hearing the last couple of hours. And yeah.
Jude's down in Jimmy John's of Lexington Broadcast Studios.
I like Jude. Jude is a classy guy.
Hey, Nick.
Very classy. Even with your laugh, Jude. Even with that giggle you got that caller in called on you. And
you were listening. I'm so impressed.
I listened. Well, where am I going to go? Play hide and seek? What else am I going to do? I couldn't be a good bartender. I got to listen to racing, especially if you and Anthony are on.
How did you hear? What was your first thoughts?
It came through like everybody else. And, it's a local TV station now. They're calling in. It's just, one thing that I wanted to tell everybody out there is, when someone passes, they'll always say nice things. They'll always say he or she was a great guy, was a great lady. It's all true about Mary Lou.
Yeah.
All the things that you'll hear from now on the next 24 hours, 48 hours, it'll be all true, which I think that's amazing to have that life, to live that life, and to have people just love you. And, we all want to be loved, I guess, but she gave it back. You could see she gave it back. And, of course, you're going to say, well, she's a very wealthy lady and this and that. It didn't matter. She was just an incredible person, a great heart, great soul, and I certainly miss her, as you could imagine. And I'm very fortunate to be with her all those years. And it's a tough loss. Sometimes you're being interviewed, and you wait for the interviewer to say something to you. It's kind of like I can almost do this show with you fellas tonight about her, because there's so much that she's given to this Saratoga and in life in general. So I look at it personally, for me, when they say a celebration of life, that's what it is today, too. It's just not a passing. It's a celebration of her life.
Yeah, she had such a great run, She had a magnificent life for decades. And she was so important to the city of Saratoga, not just the racetrack, but the city and the residents of Saratoga. Talk about that a little bit.
But I don't know how to say this, but she helped build this town to what it really is. She brought the Today Show up, the Today Show. She brought it up to Saratoga. She did all these things. She had all those celebrities and all those famous people come and visit her, and she did so many things. I just was talking to Judge Carmine, and he had said when he had his operation, she helped him because she built that Saratoga Hospital, her and her husband, John Henriksen, and everybody's got something to say about it. She looked after him. He just told me. I was just talking to him.
Do you remember do you remember the first day you met her?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'll tell you something you won't believe. This is the weirdest thing. So they have a place here called Lake Lonely. So I worked for Sandra Payson. That was Manhasset Stable. That was my biggest job. Remember that filly I had, Ride Sally?
Sure.
That belonged to Manhasset Stable. Sandra was the daughter of Joan Whitney Payson that owned the Mets and Charlie Payson. That was her parents. So Sandra invited me. I was like, black hair. I was in my late 30s, whatever. And I sit down at the table, and there's Mary Lou and C.B. Whitney. I was great. And I just got along so well with her. And then I have a picture in my barn of Strike the Gold, and she was friendly with the owners. And it's one of my great pictures. I leave it in my barn. You come over, and I want to show it to you.
I will.
It's amazing. It's 1991.
Sure.
And then, of course, I met John, her husband, John Henriksen. And we have to give a shout out to him for the years he was married to and what he did for her, too.
Sure.
He was
absolutely
tremendous. And
never left her side.
Never. He was tremendous. And, she said, Nick, you want to look at these pedigrees? I'm trying a couple of horses. And the rest was history.
That's how it happened. Just
that's
like
how
that.
It happened. The rest was history. But I've known her a long time.
Sure.
But the rest was history. And just a great relationship with both of them, you know, with Mary Lou and John. And, of course, you know, I had a special place for her. I remember 2005 looking over when I got to the Hall of Fame. She was sitting in the front row, and kind of we looked at each other. It was kind of like it was pretty cool.
Let's go back a year.
Sure.
Let's go back to 2004.
Yeah.
You were able to bring her something.
Yeah.
That nobody else up until that point was able to bring her. You brought her a horse that went, even starting in 2003, going into the 2004 season,
yeah.
Birdstone was at the top of everyone's list as far as the Kentucky Derby 15 years ago. And whatever happened along the way, the incident at Turfway Park when they sealed the track
That's
before
right.
the rain and
yep.
Derby Day. Talk us through
mm-hmm.
Belmont Day and what you guys experienced together
yeah.
as the villain. I mean, a role that Nick Zito and Mary Lou Whitney were never really in, the role of the villain that day.
Yeah. Well, it was interesting. You know, at that time, I don't know, I think I might have had 5 seconds myself. You know, myself. I might have had 5 seconds in the Belmont.
Well, but, Craig the Gold just got beat.
You know, so many.
And AP Valentine.
And 36
Red.
And so many. But what happened was everybody thought it was a coronation. Smarty Jones was going to win. And think about this. 120,000 people at a racetrack, maybe 33 million people watching, and that'll never happen again. I mean, not in New York racing, you know, right? And he comes, and I don't think to this day, a lot of people blame Stuart Elliott's ride, which I disagree with, because a mile and a quarter, he was the winner. But her pedigree took Birdstone home.
What was it like for Mrs. Whitney in that role of spoiler for all she had done up here? For that 3 minutes, she was the enemy.
Well, you know, it's a true story. You could ask John. It's an exciting race.
Yeah, they're coming down to the line here at Saratoga, and it was He Hate Me who got the money. Over Bonner's arm.
But I believe they even were throwing cans and something, you know. So I made a joke. I said, well, at least the one they threw at me, because I'm from New York, I said, there wasn't anything in it. You know what I mean? There was no beer in it. But she did it graciously, if you remember. And Bob Costas couldn't believe it, and everybody couldn't believe the way she handled it. It was so spectacular with her grace and what she brought to the table.
Talking with Nick Zito, Hall of Famer. He trained many, many years for Mary Lou Whitney, who passed away today at the age of 93. And then up here at the Travers that very same year,
yeah,
wild weather day.
It'll go down as one of the top five Travers of all time, because they were almost going to cancel. I mean, it was amazing. And then I'll tell you another thing, and thanking, I think Barry Swartz was the chairman at the time, but they didn't seal the track because the rain was supposed to come like right about the race or after the race. But it was almost like, if you ever watched the movie The Natural, thunder, lightning, dark as can be. They had to even put the lights, you know, on here. ESPN had done it, and it was one of the great moments, I think, of Saratoga racing. And of course, to be part of that, Mary Lou winning that Travers in that kind of rain-soaked place was unbelievable. But as they ran the race, lightning came, it dark. It was amazing. Everybody that was here still talks about that. And that's 15 years ago.
Sure.
You know, I want to add in a little point. The year before she won the Oaks with Birdtown with us. That's Birdstone's brother. And to this day, a lot of people don't know, that's still the fastest Oaks ever run, I believe.
Wow.
If you look it up, Jew would know. He would know.
what is it like? So, we know what happened in front of the cameras and stuff. But when she wins the Travers, right, in the Eton Blue and the Brown,
yes.
And she's home, she's in her hometown,
yes.
Think of all the chaos going on in the sky.
Yes.
I'm sure you guys go out and celebrate that night.
No, it's interesting because we all got soaking wet. And Kim and I just had a pizza, and I don't know where she went. But it
what
was
did she
great.
Say to you behind closed doors?
Well, you know what? Thank you for saying that, because she was a regular person.
So I know. Tim Wilkins told plenty of stories about Mrs. Whitney's mouth and her sense of humor.
Oh, yeah. She was a regular person. So I was very privileged. Behind closed doors, she was incredible. I mean, I really, you know, and it was a great, you know, it was a great thing for me. You know, you could hear, I'm sorry and I'm sad, but I'm also, I'm celebrating her.
Like you said, it's a celebration
of life.
Don't forget,
you know what, look, Anthony, Jude. She was the queen of Saratoga. Now, you could replace just about anybody. Try to replace her
impossible.
In this town. That's impossible. So anybody that wants to become a queen or thinks she might become a queen, the best she's going to do is a duchess or something else. She ain't going to be no queen. You know, no one's going to take her place. She stood alone, just like Saratoga stands alone.
Yeah, they exemplify the same qualities.
Hey, Jude, did we leave you out?
No, that's okay. I'm enjoying listening. You know, the wise man is quiet because he knows how little he knows. But the regular person thing, I never got the pleasure of hanging out with Mrs. Whitney. I met her one time briefly. But I mean, I loved her. I thought she was just magnificent. All the things that she did, and not only for racing, but for art and for community. You know, she was not just a one trick pony. I mean, she did a little bit of everything. The philanthropy everybody knows about, and how many people she helped, and I mean, just an amazing human being. And I think that's the best part of her, is that she was 100% human being and never put herself above anybody or any of that. She was right in there pitching with everybody from the grooms to the elites in the turf club.
Thank you for saying that. Thank you for telling your audience, because it's her and her husband John are responsible for that backstretch that they have on every day. You know, every day. When the meet is on, they do amazingly
The breakfast area.
Well, the food, you know, the food that they have for those, you know, the workers and everything. Mm-hmm. That's their project. And you're absolutely right. And thank you for saying that, because I think a lot of people need to know that.
Who do you remember the most about her, Nick?
You see, I'm smiling. I'm not even, you know, I'm smiling because I want to remember that.
I thought you were going to come up here, if I'm being honest, and I know you a very long time.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to come up here in a little bit of a different mood.
I was. But you know what? Somebody pointed out, actually Tim Wilkin, your friend, pointed out. He said, don't you think it's a celebration of life, too? Because he kind of got me. I said, you know, he's right. I mean, and now
they had some relationship.
So now you're telling me about, you know, what do you remember? And you see, I'm smiling. Because there's so many great things about that lady.
You have one particular story?
Yeah, I'll tell you one story. I'll tell you two racetrack stories first. You'll love this. Hey, Jude, you trained horses once, didn't you?
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yep. Okay. 20 years in California.
So I'm getting Birdstone ready for the Travers. Should have Anthony answer the phone because it's the news people. But anyway, radio is more important than television.
Thank you very much.
This is the NBC affiliate, the CBS affiliate. Well, they could wait. I got a horse in later, so they could wait. But anyway, so I'll tell you, this is kind of a cool story. So, and she'd get mad at me sometimes. She would. Not a lot, but she would get mad once in a while. So I'm watching Birdstone train. And he's training for the Travers. And Maxine's been with me a long time. So I said, you know, let's work him. I know, let's just pull like a cheap. Let's kind of work him like almost a mile. But we'll go from the half-mile pole. I mean, we'll go from the half-mile pole or something. We'll just keep going or something. So anyway, I said, try to work them twice. That's what I told him.
Work them past the wire.
I said, no, but try
turn.
To work them 2 half miles. You know what I mean? Like a mile, right? So if you work a mile on a training track, that's almost, that's like, you got to be Superman to do that, you know? Anyway, so she works the horse brilliantly, this and that. And anyway, I said, wow, because I said, holy God, he just kept going, and it was amazing. I think I got, listen to this, on the training track, I'm pretty sure I got like 27/8 and 25/4, and I galloped out the mile in like 40, which is inhuman on the Oklahoma training track.
Wow.
Right? So I said to Mary Lou, I said, boy, Mary Lou, isn't it something how these good horses could train themselves? She goes, look, wash your mouth out with soap. Sonny would fire. You're a horse trainer. In other words, I said, but I was telling the truth. These good horses train themselves, right or wrong sometimes, you know. But that's how efficient, effective, and clear thinker she was about horses. Look, she loved her horses, period.
And you called her Mary Lou. She didn't go for the Mrs. Whitney stuff, right?
No, I never. I don't think I ever called her Mrs. Whitney in my life. I always called her Mary Lou. I don't think so. I called John. I called him a few times, Mr. Henriksen, but he told me to, you know, just call him John. You know, maybe once or twice I would just tease him. I think he even got mad. You know, that's how good, that's the kind of people they were. And that's what they've done for racing. You ask any, and you know, we're missing a big part. It's Saratoga.
Of course.
Let me tell you something, bud. She's loved down in Lexington. She's loved in the state of Kentucky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so are you. So if anybody would know, it would be you. It would be thanks. You, my friend.
Anyway, so you think I should go on camera now?
Go do your TV stuff.
See the fake. That's fake news. This is real news.
Well, we appreciate you acknowledging that. And
hey, Jude, now you see, I listen to you, Jude, your show because of you.
Well, I appreciate it. I always enjoy right,
Nick, thank you.
Talking to you.
Thank you, and God bless Mary Lou, and thank you.
There it is, Hall of Fame trainer Nick Zito looking back on the life of his longtime friend Mary Lou Whitney, who, if you are just tuning in, did pass away yesterday at the age of 93. And JT, so much fun hearing Nick reflect on Mary Lou and what she was all about, what she meant to Saratoga, what she meant to the sport, and he would know it as well as anybody. And that was one of the more enjoyable interviews that I've heard in quite some time, and really, I sat there yesterday after Lee sent it to me and listened to the entire thing, and I said, this has to be played this morning somewhere. I have to fit this into Equine Forum because it was just so, so good.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. It was a joy and a pleasure to do, and of course, Nick always says nice things about HRRN, which is great, and his insights into...
Yeah, that was an HRN promo. I love that, too.
Well, his insights into Mary Lou are, you know, singular. I mean, they're things that are, you know, personal to him. And and he shares those sentiments with, you know, millions of people. She was just amazing. And it was really an honor to be able to talk to him and hear what he had to say about her, because nobody else will give you that.
No, right or wrong.
Right or wrong.
Yep. Our man, Nick Zito. All right, here's what's coming up in the rest of the program. We're going to bring you that interview with Joe Talamo. He is set to join us coming up in just a few minutes from Monmouth Park. He will be aboard Mucho Gusto in this afternoon's Grade 1 Haskell Invitational, looking to add to Bob Baffert's record number of wins. Bob has won the race 8 times. Nobody has ever done that. And Joe looking to give him number 9 with Mucho Gusto later today. We'll talk to Joe. We have Al Young from Four Roses Bourbon coming up to tell you about a new recipe that they released just a couple of months ago. So we'll talk about that. And also want to remind you that if you're interested in the best coverage online or in print form of thoroughbred racing, well, Blood Horse Magazine is your source. They've been covering thoroughbred racing and breeding for over 100 years, and they are the industry's only weekly magazine. That's right, for feature stories from the industry's best writers, in-depth analysis, award-winning photography, stake shells, and comprehensive coverage of the ever-changing world of thoroughbred racing and breeding, it's Blood Horse Magazine. Don't miss an issue. Go to subscribe.bloodhorse.com today to sign up. We're back to visit with Joe Talamo next on the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Kentucky Downs.
Attention, Kentucky Breds. Make plans to race at the upcoming Kentucky Downs meet starting August 31st, where Kentucky Breds compete for huge purses. Kentucky Breds will run for $130,000 in maiden events, with allowance races offering up to $145,000, the highest in the nation. Plus a Breeders' Cup win and you're in the Turf Sprint on September 7th. With additional purse money available for KTDF-eligible horses, Kentucky Downs is the place to race a Kentucky Bred this summer. Visit KentuckyBred.org for details.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at TonySteaksandSeafood.com.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. And remember, when you go to the Lexus store, ask for the Godfather, Tony Attiano. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
This successful son of AP Indy has sired six millionaires, including Eclipse champion West Coast. This year, Flatter is adding even more stakes winners to his outstanding record at stud. In the auction ring, Flatter topped the 2018 Fasig Tipton July sale with a $520,000 yearling. And this year, his juveniles have sold up to $375,000. Success on the track, success in the ring. Flatter, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Hi, this is jockey Emma Jane Wilson, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Kentucky Downs.
Mucho Gusto's head is in front at the quarter pole. He's now in front a half a length of Visitant. Kingley is dropping back at the rail, and Roadster kicks in on the outside. There's an eighth of a mile to go, and Mucho Gusto is the one to beat. Kicks away smartly to Roadster on the outside. Kingley and Visitant, but Mucho Gusto means business in the Affirm Stakes, and he's clear by three. A clear-cut victory for Mucho Gusto and Joe Talamo, hand-ridden late to score by 2.5. Roadster was second. Visitant third. Manhattan Up finished fourth.
Frank Miramati with the call. That's the Affirm Stakes, and Mucho Gusto getting the victory that afternoon. That was at Santa Anita in his previous outing. He has won 5 of 7 starts, has never finished worse than third, and Joe Talamo has been aboard for all of those career starts. Mucho Gusto, the son of Adina Spring Stallion, Mucho Macho Man, 2-1 on the morning line in this afternoon's Haskell Invitational. Mike Pena, Jude Feld, coming to you from our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios, and joined now by the man himself, Mr. Joe Talamo, who flew all night long to get to Monmouth Park. He arrived there about 5:30 this morning, and he is with us now here on HRN. Joe, first of all, thanks for taking the time, and I don't know how you do it, my friend. I hope you could sleep on a plane.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me. Yeah, actually, me and Mike Smith both flew together, but we both slept pretty good on there, so that helps.
You know, I was thinking back to the first time that you joined us on this program, and I can't remember if it was 2007, maybe. That kind of sounds right, when we stopped by the fairgrounds for the Louisiana Derby, and you were there.
Back when I was a kid.
Yeah, back when.
You were 17, I think.
You're still a kid.
You were riding for Bobby Frankel.
I was 17 in 07.
You were very fortunate to be able to ride for Bobby Frankel when you were an apprentice, because everybody that ever did that turned out to be an excellent rider, and you're no exception to that rule. I fell in love with you that day, and I still love you.
Oh, thank you. No, he was a really big part of me coming out to California. If it wasn't for him, I'm not sure where I'd be riding, but he was definitely one that steered me out here.
Joe, you've come such a long way since that first interview with us all those years ago, and you're still at the top of your game. You've won nearly 2,000 races in your career, countless graded stakes, and looking to add the Haskell to that list later today. Tell us about Mucho Gusto.
He's really training unbelievable. As you said earlier, I mean, he's got 5 wins, a second and a third. I mean, he's really a model of consistency. You can do anything with him. I mean, he's such a quick horse out the gate, so right away he puts you in the race. He's quick enough to go to the lead, but he can definitely sit off it. He's actually better if he can have a little target in front of him. But so many times he just breaks so quick, he naturally ends up in front. So it's going to be interesting the first 16th of a mile, really, because really the 4 horses inside him, any one of them could show speed, and then obviously Maximum Security is a really quick horse, so it's going to be interesting who commits and who doesn't on the first 16th or 8th of a mile.
How long does it take you to know what your strategy is going to be when you come out of that starting gate?
I mean, it really depends with the different type of horse you ride, but with him, I mean, like I said, he's one, he's a pretty good gate horse, so you don't want to take that away from him. You definitely want him to break good and secure a good position, and then kind of see what everyone else does. I mean, if 2 or 3 go out there crazy, I mean, obviously I don't want to really be a part of that, so hopefully we'll try and sit off. But then again, if everyone's kind of looking around and seeing what everyone else is doing, then you could steal away with easy fractions, and we'll take that as well.
Yeah, he's an interesting horse because on the Brisnet PPs, their late pace figures, he went to the lead the previous race, the Las Barrera, and he finished with 100 late pace rating. And last time he sat off the pace and he finished with 100. So he can finish regardless of what he has to do early, and that's got to give you a ton of confidence going into this race.
Absolutely, and I love the post for him. Anytime he can draw outside a little bit helps, because a few times, especially in the Summit Park Derby when he drew the rail, it's kind of tough because, like I said, he breaks so good. You don't want to take that away from him. But then again, once he secures the lead, you're kind of stuck if someone else comes and pressures you. You know, so when he draws good like that, that's such a big advantage for him because, like I said, he breaks really sharp to secure a good position, but at the same time, he can settle well, too.
Joe, you get a leg up from the Hall of Famer Bob Baffert, who has won the Haskell more than any trainer in history. He's looking for number 9 this afternoon with Mucho Gusto. How cool is that, to be able to walk into the paddock, shake his hand, and know you're getting a leg up from a legend like that?
Oh, it's unbelievable. And I've been real fortunate. Really, last summer, he started putting me on a lot of horses, and really ever since then I've been working for him pretty much every morning, and he's really given me a lot of good opportunities, and especially with a horse like Mucho Gusto, it's always a pleasure to ride good horses like that, so I'm very fortunate.
Walk us through your preparation. How do you get ready for a big race like this? You already touched on some of the horses to your inside, and of course Maximum Security and the speed and all those types of things, but how do you do it? Are you watching replays? Are you pouring over the PPs in the racing form? What's your strategy? How do you get ready?
Really, a little bit of all that. Actually, all the preparation's pretty much done. I know the form in and out of all of them. And actually, on race replays, I really like to watch a lot because, I mean, sometimes you read something on the form and you watch the replay and it's something totally different, you know. So I really like to go back and watch stuff like that. But I mean, really, after that, it's one of those things, once you have it in your mind, you don't really want to overthink it either. You know, I mean, you can study the form for 8 hours. I mean, it's not going to change automatically. So, I mean, once you have a game plan, plan A, B, and C, and know all your horses, I mean, that's about as much as you can do.
Yeah, the ABC plan, Johnny Velasquez uses that with great authority, and it's a good one. You've always been a good reader of the past performances, even when you were just a kid, as you say, you always were good reading the form. Did you grow up going to the track?
Absolutely. My dad took me there, when I was 7 or 8, taught me how to read it, and then his dad went to the track and taught him, so it's kind of in the blood.
Your dad, when he used to take you there, Joe, it was your dad, I mean, obviously he was a fan, but was he involved in the sport in any other way?
Yes, he was. He actually, for a little while, he trained, not a lot. He had like 2 or 3 horses, but he was an assistant trainer for an old trainer called Connie DeSistro, and he worked for him for about 20-something years, just in the wintertime at the fairgrounds. And that's actually how I started going out with him in the mornings when I was about 6 or 7 during Christmas vacation. And then it got to be every weekend I would go out with him just because I fell in love with it. And then and that's really how I got my start, just falling in love with the game at the fairgrounds, and then just kind of working my way up from there.
Talking with jockey Joe Telamo here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. As I mentioned at the top of the interview, his win total currently sits at 1,965, so closing in on the 2,000 win milestone. Joe, is that something that crosses your mind? Are you aware of that milestone looming on the horizon?
I'm actually not.
Now you are.
I didn't even know. I actually didn't know.
You want me to hit him for you?
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, as a kid, you know, you're going to the races with your dad. I mean, would you ever in your wildest dreams think you'd be sitting here just shy of 2,000 wins as a jockey?
I mean, you always hope and dream about that, but I mean, until you get close to that, not really. And it's flown by. I mean, I started riding in June of 06, and I mean, it seems like that was a few years ago. It really flies by.
Yeah, there's no question about it. I mean, I remember you sitting there at that picnic table near the paddock at Fairgrounds, and you know, we were talking to you, and when you left, I said to Mike, this kid's really going places, and my handicapping was good at least, but you know, it doesn't seem like that long ago. I mean, it's amazing how time flies.
Yeah, it really does, and like I said, over the years, I've just been very fortunate to ride some really good horses for some really good outfits too, so hopefully we can keep that trend going.
Joe, that's the only mount that you have today at Monmouth, and that race won't go until nearly 6 o'clock tonight. So how do you keep your mind busy, or do you, or do you just try to get some rest? What's the day going to be like for Joe Telamo before the Haskell?
Actually, we're about to, my wife Elizabeth actually flew out here from Los Angeles, so we're actually going to meet some friends who drove up from Washington, D.C., some really good friends of ours. So we're going to actually, in about 30 minutes, just go get a quick little breakfast, hang out for a little bit, and I'm going to get to the track. I'll probably get to the track a little bit before noon or something, really just relax. I'll probably go take a little nap and then watch. I'd like to, especially when I'm out of town, watch a lot of the races all day, just to kind of see if there's any kind of a track bias or and stuff like that. So I'll definitely be paying attention to that.
A lot's been made about the heat at Monmouth and around the East Coast today. What can you tell us? Is it steamy there right now?
A little bit, but trust me, I've ridden in the heat at Louisiana Downs before, so I don't think it can get any worse than that. So, but I know they have a lot of really good protocols today with misters and short post parades. So, and they've done that at Santa Anita too as well. I mean, there was days where it got close to 100 degrees where we just went straight to the gate, very short post parades. They had ice water ready and everything worked out fine. So I'm sure Monmouth is going to be just about the same.
Yeah, he's jockey Joe Telamo. And Joe, we know it's a busy day. You've got your wife coming in. Go enjoy the rest of your day and all the best in the Haskell. Good luck with Mucho Gusto. And most importantly, safe trip out there, my friend.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, guys.
All right, appreciate it, buddy. Joe Telamo, like all of our guests who appear on the program, is going to receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race. It is the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. And don't forget, you can wear what you love by visiting embracetherace.com. Class act, huh?
Yeah, he's just a fantastic guy and has been since he was very young. He's
super talented rider,
yeah,
too.
Very talented rider. He's very polished with interviews and things. We actually did a vignette about him when he rode the Breeders' Cup for Carla Gaines. It's one of my favorite things that I ever wrote.
I remember the line that you had. Do you remember that?
Yeah. Most people have neckties older than Joe Telamo.
Yes. Yeah.
Every time I look at my neckties, I think about that line because it's true. It's definitely true with me.
Yeah, I mean, he's still a kid, right? Let's face it. I mean, he's still a kid, but he's always been mature beyond his years. And I think that's been a big part of his success. And, you know, the fact that he has a lot of natural talent, too, certainly helps.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a really cool guy.
How about the horse, Mucho Gusto? A major player today or what?
I think he is. I mean, I don't know if he's going to win or not. You got the Baffert factor, right? I mean, yesterday Anthony said Bob Baffert won 77 Haskells.
Yep.
And I cracked up, but you know, I think they've only run the Haskell 45 times or something like that. So, but he's got good speed. He's got talent. He's learned to rate, which I think is a big factor for him. He doesn't have to blast him off.
Yeah.
And it looks like Joe's got that in his mind that he doesn't have to, but he can if he wants to. And the past performances bear that out. So I think he's a major player in there. I don't know if he'll win. I don't know what to do with maximum security. And certainly the horse that won last time, King for a Day, is a very talented horse. And
Johnny V back aboard today.
Yeah. Pletcher keeps talking about him like he's the next coming. And Todd doesn't usually get that effusive about horses, but it's going to be a good race.
Yeah, it's a good chance to remind you, coming out of that Joe Talamo interview, that next Saturday, mark this on your calendar, it is the 6th annual PDJF Day across America, and many racetracks celebrating the PDJF and helping to raise money for that organization. You can go to pdjf.org to learn more, and if you're planning on, or at least looking for a date to go out to a racetrack near you, next Saturday would probably be a good time to do it, because they'll have several different activities taking place throughout the day. I'm sure there'll be plenty of autograph signings at your local racetrack, all to celebrate and to help the Permanently Disabled Jockey Fund. Visit pdjf.org to learn more. And there will be a code next Saturday that we will tell you about on this program where you can text to donate $10 to the PDJF. Really, really simple, really easy to do. And we'll encourage you to do that next Saturday, PDJF Day across America. Visit pdjf.org to learn more. We're back with more, and visit with Al Young from Four Roses still ahead before we get ready to wrap things up. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the Breeders' Cup.
Castleton Lions is proud to introduce precocious multiple graded stakes winner Protonico for the 2019 breeding season. A Son of Giants Causeway out of an AP Indy mare, Protonico rolled to a 12 3/4 length victory in his debut as a 2-year-old before taking the Grade 3 Smarty Jones and Grade 3 Discovery Handicap at 3, followed by an ultra game win in the Grade 2 Ali Sheba at Churchill Downs in his 4-year-old season. Protonico joins a Castleton Lions stallion roster that includes multiple Eclipse champion Gio Ponti and Blue Blood sprinter Justin Phillip. Gio Ponti is the sire of Eclipse champion Dre Fong, Canadian Classic winner Sir Dudley Diggs, and stakes winners Miss Technicality and America's Tale. While Justin Phillip is represented by exciting stakes-winning filly Safe to Say and stakes place runners Justaholic, Blushing Justine, and Upset Brewing. Protonico, Gio Ponti, and Justin Phillip standing at Castleton Lions.
Adina Springs stallion Mucho Macho Man is a top sire in the making.
Mucho Macho Man! He did it over Will Take Charge!
The Breeders' Cup Classic winner is heating up with the weather, as his progeny have earned over $1.2 million in 2019. Top Canadian 3-year-old He's a Macho Man is participating in the Canadian Triple Crown, and 4-time graded stakes winner and Grade 1 placed Mucho Gusto is on track for the Grade 1 Haskell.
Mucho Gusto means business in the Affirm Stakes, and he's clear by 3. A clear-cut victory for Mucho Gusto.
California Cup Oaks winner Mucho Unusual is scheduled for more stakes performances at Del Mar.
And this is going to be an authoritative score for Mucho Unusual all the way in the Cal Cup Oaks.
If you're looking for a Saturday horse, Mucho Macho Man can get one for you. Visit AdinaStallions.com.
Alternation, sire of Serengeti Empress, winner of this year's Grade 1 Kentucky Oaks.
Serengeti Empress has taken the Kentucky Oaks.
From his first two crops, Alternation has produced 9 black type horses and 5 black type winners with more than $4.7 million in earnings. 79% of his runners have won or placed, and Alternation is among the leaders of his crop with average earnings per runner of over $42,000. Alternation, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
Hi, my name is Alan Garcia.
My name is Paco Lopez.
This is Jose Lescano.
This is jockey Emma Jane Wilson, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Kentucky Downs.
Dr. Dorbin ridden from second to try to stay with him. 235, then it's 5 back to Dabster.
They're at the top of the lane, and Catalina Cruises, full of run and going on for home, still being handwritten out here. And it's Catalina Cruiser opening up 4, 5, 6. You can pick your own number now. It's only academic. Catalina Cruiser and Drayton Van Dyke. Catalina Cruiser will remain unbeaten and could not have been more impressive in the San Diego. Dr. Dorr was second. Dabster was third. Then 235 and Harlan Punch.
That's Trevor Denman with a call of last year's San Diego handicap at Del Mar. You can pick your number. Well, that number turned out to be 6 3/4 lengths for Catalina Cruiser, who dominated that race a year ago, is back in action later this afternoon to defend that title in the San Diego at Del Mar. Catalina Cruiser breaking from the rail 1-2. Huge, huge favorite on the morning line for trainer John Sadler. Joel Rosario, who was aboard last time at Belmont for a win in the Grade 2 True North, is back again as Catalina Cruiser stretches out, and he is so versatile, so good, JT.
Yeah, he's a talented horse. I really liked him a lot last time in the True North, and he won with flying colors. Under Joel Rosario, Joel comes back to California to ride him, and I think that's important. He's been training nicely for John Sadler. Looks absolutely like the horse to beat. You didn't need me to tell you that, but you know, there's a couple of horses in there that could be interesting. Core Beliefs, number two, takes the blinkers off for Pete Erton, and this horse has a few wins on his chart that are pretty nice. He's owned by Gary Brode, who just bought Walmack Farm a couple of months ago, and is looking to make a big-time nursery in Kentucky, which is great for our state.
It's too bad they couldn't get a hotter jockey, though.
Yeah, well, you know,
Flavion Pratt.
He's got limited ability.
Yeah. He's winning just about everything he sits on.
Everything
right now,
he
especially
sees.
All the big races.
Yeah, and he's so good out of the gate too, which is unusual for a European jockey. But he gets great position. And Draft Pick's another interesting horse. He won his last start. Joe Talmo rode him in allowance race at Santa Anita in June, and he seems like he's coming on in his last 4 or 5 starts. He's been doing really, really well. So those horses are you know, considered some competition for Catalina Cruiser, but if he runs his A race, he's going to be really tough.
Yeah, by the way, Flavion Pratt, a winner of the Kentucky Derby this year, of course, in that controversial Kentucky Derby, look at it any way you want, but he did win the race and then came back and took Canada's version of the Kentucky Derby, the Queen's Plate, the Canadian bred race. We were there to broadcast that race, and that's why I say that he's winning all the big ones this year. I believe he was the first jockey since, was it Kent DeSormo who pulled off that double, winning the Kentucky Derby and the Queen's Plate in the same year?
Yeah, there's only three jockeys in history that have done it.
Yeah.
And he's one of them now. Bill Hartack's the other one with Northern Dancer, both the Derby and the Queen's Plate. We've got the second leg of the Canadian Triple Crown on Tuesday. At Fort Erie Racetrack, the Prince of Wales. It's a very good field. There's 5 horses, but the best 5 come out of the Queen's Plate, and it's going to be a very competitive race. You'll recognize a lot of jockeys in that race, including Flavio Pratt and Javier Castellano. So if you're not doing anything Tuesday afternoon, turn the race on. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, how about that? The 5-horse field, you have One Bad Boy, who did win the Queen's Plate. Flavian back aboard One Bad Boy. You have Avi's Flatter. That's Javier. Number 3 is Tone Broke, Ricardo Santana Jr. Number 4 is He's a Macho Man with Patrick Husbands. And number 5, Skywire, Eurico Da Silva is aboard for Mark Cassie. And that's the horse that I thought would win the Queen's Plate. Had a bit of a rough trip in there. Maybe he turns the tables on One Bad Boy. But the way One Bad Boy ran at Woodbine, he's going to take some beating.
Yeah, well, the race at Woodbine was on the Tapeta surface. This one's on the dirt at Fort Erie. And then the last race of the Triple Crown is on the grass. So it's a very interesting Triple Crown they have in Canada. 3 different races on 3 different surfaces, 3 different distances, and looking forward to that on Tuesday.
Saratoga, we mentioned, was dark today, canceled because of the heat. They will be back in action tomorrow. They shifted some of the programming around a little bit, but the stakes races that were scheduled for today have just been moved to tomorrow.
Yeah, so if you bought the past performances for Saturday, they're going to be good for Sunday. What they did was there was a steeplechase race that was called off on Wednesday. They moved that to the first race. They dropped all the races that were scheduled for Saturday down a number, so they'll be number 2 through 12, I guess. And then race number 13 is going to be the Shoe V, which was the stakes that was scheduled to run on Sunday anyway, so that won't be upset. So it's a good situation for horse players, and it's a fantastic card at Saratoga tomorrow, so... Don't hesitate to play, and don't throw your past performances away if you already bought them.
And we'll encourage people to head over to our website. You can listen to the Weekend Stakes Preview, which is presented by Naira Betts. It aired last night live at 6 o'clock Eastern, but the podcast is up on our website where Jude and Anthony walk through all the races coming up later this afternoon, and you can get their selections there. It's the Weekend Stakes Preview presented by Naira Betts, and of course Jude has a two-day sheet out there at his Pope Jude .com, so you can go check that out and download that sheet and get all his selections for the next 2 days, including that card at Saratoga tomorrow. Well, each month we bring you a bit of a – we've done it a little bit differently this year. We've taken you on a tour of Four Roses Bourbon, and I had the privilege to stop out there earlier this year and visit with Al Young, and he walked me around the entire facility, and we took different stops along the tour, much like you would get if you go out to Four Roses and take the tour, and it was really interesting stuff. Well, Al is with us live this morning, and Al, first of all, good morning, but when I was out there with you, you told me that sometime around the Kentucky Derby, you were hoping to debut a new small batch select, and that has been very well received.
That's exactly right. In fact, it was sort of a soft push on the thing, getting it out into the market. And it is available only in Kentucky, New York, California, Georgia, and Texas. But it's very unique since it's non-chill filtered. It's about 104 proof. And it's a mingling of 6- and 7-year-old bourbons that have some pretty characteristics, some herbal notes, and slight spice. It's really terrific.
So when you're trying to formulate all of that, how many tests does it take before you say this is the right one?
Well, I'll tell you, Brent's been working on it for about 2 years, if that tells you anything. And it's multiple setups, multiple blends to try to get the right combination of the flavors that he's looking for. And in this one, I think he's headed... Excuse me, but I think he's headed for the winner's circle with this one. The nose has got some raspberry quality, some clove and nutmeg. And the palate has got some apricots and some berries. And what I really like is a vanilla and light oak finish. And then we've got lingering spearmint and a touch of cinnamon. Now, that sounds like it's all canned words, but it's true. This stuff is really... the fourth rose.
Well, we have been lucky enough to come out and have you show us the ropes out there and everything that goes into making one of these fantastic bourbons that you provide. And it is a long process, and I was just wondering, and it sounds like a very complex flavor profile that you've got going. So I can see where it would take 2 years at least. So good job.
Thank you.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Small batch select from Four Roses. Al, if I've become a big fan of the Four Roses small batch. I have a bottle sitting on my bar at home. How would you compare this to the regular small batch, the small batch select?
This is a little bit different expression since it is non-chill filtered, and it is a higher proof, and it's younger whiskey, 6- and 7-year-old, whereas the whiskeys that go into the regular small batch are only 2 of the yeast strains producing a slightly spicy and rich fruity combination, and they're usually 7 or 8 years old. And so you've got this combination going on in the two. This regular, if anything called regular, small batch has a good Manhattan quality about it if you like a mixed drink. And it stands alone on its own, and of course this new one does well on its own. It's really good.
Yeah, all of them are really good, but now I have to go try this one too.
Yeah, absolutely. So that the new one's more of a sipping whiskey, huh?
It's kind of a sipping whiskey, yes, and it is 104 proof, but it is highly, highly contagious. Once you start trying it with friends and you take a taste of it yourself, it kind of spreads like wildfire. In fact, the tastings I've been to lately, as soon as people find out it's there, they say, oh, yeah, I've got some of that at home, but I don't seem to be able to get enough of it. So let me have a finger or two of it.
Yeah, and again, only available in New York and Kentucky right now. Is that right, Al?
Actually, it has found its way into California, Georgia, and Texas as well.
Okay.
It was kind of a soft beginning, but the response for it in all of those different markets tell us that I think we're onto something here.
Yeah, it's Four Roses, small batch select. Of course, you can visit the Four Roses website if you want to learn more about that. And, of course, Al, we always encourage people to come out and take the tour. If they're going to be in the Bluegrass for any of the racing or horse activities taking place, they should stop by Lawrenceburg, Kentucky, and get a chance to visit with the great folks at Four Roses and take that tour, because it was one of the more enjoyable things I've done this entire year.
Well, we thank you for that, especially since we're about to round up getting all of our fermenters put in place. I believe when you all were out there the last time, we still had several to finish, but we're getting closer to that goal, and it's really going to be quite a hustle and bustle in place over the next few years.
Yeah, no doubt about it. He is Al Young, Four Roses Bourbon. Al, as always, appreciate the visit here this morning, and thanks so much for taking a few minutes to be with us live on the show today.
It's our pleasure. Thank you very much for having us.
All right. And Al Young, a guy who has, by the way, a great voice for radio.
Yeah.
Doesn't he?
Yeah.
I tell him that all the time. Yeah. I'm jealous of his voice.
You can bring a bottle and come and do the show this week.
Ooh, now there's an idea. Pontiff, I like the way you think,
my
friend.
You know me. Yeah. 5 o'clock somewhere.
Bring that small batch select, now available in the HRN studios.
That's right.
Yes, we'll have some Jimmy John's with it. We'll order in some Jimmy John's.
There you
sip
go.
On a little bourbon.
A little snack, a little bourbon.
Number 14 and small batch select.
Yeah.
How can that be bad?
Sounds perfect.
It does.
What a pairing.
All right, we're going to take one more break. We'll come back and wrap it up and tell you what's ahead this summer on HRRN. This is the Equine Forum on Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Kentucky Downs.
Airdrie Studs Summer Front is poised to skyrocket to national sire prominence with his first crop of two-year-olds in 2019. A multiple stakes winner at two, this talented son of Warfront went on to win her place in 12 graded stakes with lifetime earnings of more than $1 million. With an explosive turn of foot, Summer Front routinely recorded times of a mile and 33 in some of the best grade one mile races in the country and possesses everything it takes to be an important sire for years to come. Airdrie Studs Summer Front. Think about it.
When it comes to buying tractors, mowers, and farm equipment, look no further than locally owned Central Equipment on Red Mile Road in Lexington. A third-generation family business, Central Equipment has been servicing the equine industry for more than 46 years, working closely with the NTRA to ensure their equine clients get the best pricing on their new John Deere purchases. At Central Equipment, you'll find top brands like Exmark, Kubota, Still, John Deere, and Woods. Stop in today and experience the family-owned atmosphere or visit centralequipment.com.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
Power. Anchor Down has the lead as they turn for home. Anchor Down in front by three. Anchor Down has built a five-length lead with just a 16th to the finish. Anchor Down wins the Westchester.
Passion. Anchor Down is still there coming to the 16th pull. Tamar Coes can't get by him. And Anchor Down wires the field in the Kelso.
Performance.
Gainesway Stallion, Anchor Down, a son of three-time champion sire Tappet and a top miler who won the Grade 2 Kelso with a final time of 132 and 4/5, posting a 108 buyer speed figure. A half to Grade 1 winner Sweet Lulu. Anchor Down strongly resembles his sire and will be represented by his first crop of yearlings this year. Brilliantly fast, Anchor Down, standing at Gainesway.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainesway Farm.
This is Carlos Martin, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Kentucky Downs.
Welcome back. Mike Penn and Jude Fell getting ready to wrap up a very busy morning for you here on the Equine Forum. Don't forget, no Saturdays at Saratoga race coverage today because, well, Saratoga's not racing today. So we are back next Saturday. That coverage all presented by our friends at visitbarbados.org. And you can tune in to Anthony Stabile and Mike Beers. They bring you coverage every single Saturday throughout the meet. Of course, Jude and I will be up at Saratoga for the Whitney and the Fasig Tipton Saratoga Select Sale. We'll be there to bring you coverage of that yearling sale both nights later on here in the beginning of August. And that'll be a lot of fun. It's one of our favorite trips, and get a chance to check out some of the top older horses in the country in the Whitney.
Yeah, I mean, that's you know, a great week, the Whitney and the sale, and a lot of action up there, a lot of people in town. It's always a fun week.
And it's going to be special this year, too. I mean, considering, I mean, it's always a special race, and, you know, Mary Lou Whitney, always such an integral part of that day, but, of course, passing away yesterday at the age of 93. So this year's Whitney will have a little extra meaning to it as we remember somebody who meant so much to so many.
Yeah, she was a great lady, and I'm sure there'll be lots of hoopla and celebration of her life on Whitney Day, and then we'll carry that over to Monday and Tuesday night with the sale. Fasig Tipton always puts on a good show. A lot of people from the neighborhood come and watch the big horses sell. It's a tremendous catalog, and looking forward to that 2 days of entertainment and sport. All the big owners and trainers are there. So
yeah, all right. Well, listen, this is going to wrap it up for us here this morning. We want to thank our producer, Lee Delapina. For Jude Feld, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening. Go Steelers.
Good night, Barbados.